It's time again for the Scotty Johnny Podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam. Talking Wisconsin sports, two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what he read on Twitter. With music by Duluth Greats, Cars and Trucks, here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scotty Johnny Podcast. I'm going to be going with John solo again today. Aaron is at annual training, his 2 to 3 weeks of National Guard duty in the summer. I did reach out to a couple friends of the podcast, Lee Chekovic, who's with the Rap Podcast, or It's a Rap Podcast, and also to Jim Widener, who's with the Last Word on Sports, Packers Reports. But too many people had too many things to do today, so I'm going to be coming at you live and solo today. But we got a little bit to get to. The first things first, we want to tell you that you can follow the show on Twitter, at ScottyJohnny1. In terms of hosts, you can follow myself, Jonathan Barnett, at JBarn54. And, of course, you can follow Aaron Cheddar Talk Flottam with, at Cheddar Talk on Twitter. You can also find our podcast posted on the ScottyJohnny.com website. You can also find us on Facebook. And, those are many different ways that you can get to the show. You can also find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, any place that you are finding your podcast, you can find us there. Please make sure that when you do, you download, you listen, you rate us, and you share us with your friends and family so that other people can find the podcast and that we can get a little broader audience every day. So we continue to grow the show, and I thank everybody for listening. We'll get right into sports here again with our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
And as per usual, we'll try to start off with a bit of Packer stuff because that's really what drives this show. That's really what drives a lot of Wisconsin sports. Not a whole lot. OTAs wrapped up, which means the voluntary part of workouts is done. We are now moving right into the part where everybody has to be there, the mini camps. So that'll be coming up quickly. The one question people are having now is, hey, is Josh Jones going to show up? And he sat through the entire OTAs looking for a trade or something else along those lines. I guess just he wants to be out or he wants to be paid. And I think the big thing he wants at this point, because he hasn't talked a lot, which is good for him. He shouldn't really say a whole lot. He should just address it and let it be done. But he kind of wants to be in a spot where he's going to be a featured player, where he's going to get a chance to start. He's not going to get that in Green Bay with Savage and with Amos back there. And what he's done by not being there is he's allowed Raven Green to get that chance to say that maybe he should get that same playing time that was Josh Jones before. So he's kind of put himself in a bad spot here. Now, that being said, he can show up and get himself back into rhythm and start going from here on out. But he's put himself behind the eight ball as basically the only guy, not exactly the only guy, but the only real veteran person of note that wasn't there. He's got a holdout essentially coming up if he doesn't want to show up here, if he wants to keep pressing for that trade, which makes no sense to me as he's just somebody who has no leeway. You know, he doesn't have a bargaining chip in this. He doesn't have another spot to go. He doesn't have something else to play against the team. He's not about to become a free agent. Le'Veon Bell played this card last year and kind of lost. And don't tell me he got a big contract and he won. He sat out a year. He's a year older, and for a running back, that was terrible. So we'll see what he does. But for Josh Jones coming into this season, he needed to show that he was going to get some of that playing time, and he hasn't done it yet. He's been missing time with a brand new head coach, same defense coordinator, but a new head coach is going to be at least in part responsible for kind of what's going to happen with this team going forward, offense and defense. So he's really cost himself a lot there, and I think he'll show up. I guess I do. A lot of the local talk in Wisconsin is that there's just no reason for him to show up from here on out, so why would he even bother? I think he does because I think he understands, first off, he's going to get fined if he doesn't, and he's not going to get a new contract. He has zero... I think if he's got any help around him, anybody advising him who's got any sort of sense, then somebody's telling him that you don't have a bargaining chip here, and you're not getting a new contract, and you're probably not going to get traded. If the Packers were going to get, you know, just a fourth round for Clinton Dix, and just basically let him go. And the team that traded him to let him walk. How? What are they going to get for Jones? And there's just no market for him. You're talking about a backup safety. Nobody's giving up a pick for that. They'll go get that guy later. And the only other option they have is to cut him, and every team knows that. He's not the sort of guy you go out because he's not gonna start for you. There's no trades for backups at this point. The depth at safety is nice, but he's been on film for 2 years being who he is. And what we know is he's a guy who plays instinctively. He's got a great athletic set. He could still become something. I'm not saying he's done or that he needs to be cut or anything like that. The only thing we're talking about is Josh Jones needs to be on the field, and he needs to show the new people around that he's got something to do there, and he's got value to this team. If you're looking around as another team, you're saying he sat out everything, and if he starts sitting out mandatory practices, that's not something a team is going to trade for. They're not looking for somebody who's going to quit on a team that has things going for it. He's not quitting on a loser. I mean, yes, they didn't make the playoffs, but he's not quitting on a team that is a failure. So if his agent is smart, his agent's telling him, you need to figure this stuff out. You need to start getting your head in the game, start just getting to practice and start showing everybody what you've got. You can still maybe get that trade in the summer. Show that you have something a team wants to trade for rather than just telling your team that you need to be traded out. Okay, so that's the big thing. And I did say that he's not exactly the only person who didn't get the OTAs, because today is the day, Monday. Monday, of course, is we're recording this on the 10th, that Jace Sternberger signed his contract. So he's now officially there. He's ready for mini camps. He's signed in time. And I mean, I guess the big thing is what is he going to be this year? Because we're only looking at this year. We're not talking about the future. I think the future, he's got a good chance for a lot of things. But when you're looking at this team, when you're evaluating this team, you evaluate it for the next season. The NFL is a season-to-season league. Everything changes so much year to year. My first thing is there's too many guys ahead of him right now, I think. First off, you've got Jimmy Graham, who's going to be playing in a more wide-open system, should get a better look at getting the ball. This is a guy who helped, LaFleur in that, helped with Delanie Walker, who's, by the way, just great anyhow, but he had great things geared up to make Delanie Walker a key part of their offense in that entire system down there until he lost him this year. And it's going to be something where Jimmy Graham's going to have an opportunity to show a lot of things here if he can just be athletic and do the things he normally can do. If not, then he's kind of done. I don't know where else you go if you can't be successful with Aaron Rodgers. If you have 2 years with Aaron Rodgers and look pedestrian, then you don't really need to be around a lot of places anymore. So this is kind of his chance to show that he's got something else here and to try to reestablish himself as a premier tight end. On top of that, Mercedes Lewis is back, and he came back off that one-year deal last year, and he did so for a reason, and that's because they have a specific plan for him. There's a lot of tight end blocking schemes in the offense that LaFleur runs, a lot of pulling type scheme, basically coming back across the formation. In that zone, like everybody moving one way, the tight end kind of comes back across in the other direction to allow cutback lanes. And having Mercedes Lewis allows you to have that guy who can block, because Jimmy Graham is not the guy to get your blocks in this scheme or just about any scheme, I guess, if we want to be honest. But that's where we've got those two guys. Now, how deep you're going into your tight ends, probably four, unless we can show some big things out of the rest of this team to show that we need to keep more for special teams or something like that. But the big point is we've got those two. Big Bob Tonyan, as a second-year player, I expect him to have a bounce-up year. Let's not get crazy, but he's going to be somebody who I think will have some improvement and will be more interesting to watch as things go on here. And I think he's going to be an interesting future player in the next couple years, because I think he's got good hands. He's got very good route running. He understands the offense, and he had flashes last year, and I would like to really see him start making those sorts of jumps this year to be able to be a more key part of the offense, or at least a part-time player who's going to get 10 to 15 snaps a game. So that's something I think would be interesting. Then you get down to that four spot, and I think Jace Sternberger, they got him early enough that he's definitely making the team. Beyond that, who knows what else, but how much is he going to play other than special teams early on in the season? Now, history as a guide, rookie tight ends are not a great fantasy football investment, for one thing. They very rarely make giant impacts. Like I said, I've said this several times on here. I've done the numbers on the last for tight ends for probably the last 8 to 10 years. Really, the only one who jumps off the page as being something special or a top 10 or top 5 type tight end has been Hunter Henry in San Diego. Everybody else is kind of fair to middling. That includes Gronkowski. That includes Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce, again, caught zero passes as a rookie. There's just too many things different between a college tight end and a pro tight end that so many of them just take a full year to really understand things. So I expect a big jump from Bob Tonyan. I'm not saying he's going to be an all-pro or he's going to be the starter, obviously. I just think he's going to be a big jump and he's going to be worth watching. Now, having said that, the Packers did go out and get another waivers claim here for a tight end, Pharaoh McKeever, who we claimed off from the Jacksonville Jaguars. I believe he was an undrafted free agent a year ago or a year ahead of that. But he's a guy who's a big, tall guy. I think he's something like 6'6", 260, if I remember correctly. He's likely not to make this team, but he's another camp body who's going to be interesting. I don't think he passes Tonyan. I don't see that as something as possible, and I don't see him passing the other two, Mercedes Lewis or Jimmy Graham. And considering they actually went out and drafted Sternberger, I don't think that there's any chance he passes him. But he's going to be somebody to watch through camp. Again, tight ends are great for special teams, and so it's going to be interesting to start following that and seeing what we have there in terms of that depth. The only other real Packers thing is not even really news. It is just the sort of odd, massive surge in interest in the Chicago Bears and this weird push that Mitchell Trubisky is a dark horse MVP candidate. Now, I don't understand it. And I think the Bears are good. That's a really good team. If they won the North, I would be unsurprised. I'd be angry, but I wouldn't be surprised. That defense is legitimately great. They've got some decent stuff in the backfield. I mean, Tariq Cohen is incredible. They lost Jordan Howard and then drafted another running back this year to make it more of a less of a power backfield. They don't really have that power back like they had with Howard. Now they have a couple scat backs where they're really going to look to pass more, it looks like, and set up that sort of game plan. They've got a good tight end. And they have, I mean, I guess they added Cordarrelle Patterson, who is a very limited kind of wide receiver. But they still have Allen Robinson, who's very good. But that offense isn't, they're not a world-beater offense, but that defense is incredible. That being said, if the Packers are on their game and everybody stays healthy and we have a complete Rodgers for the whole year, there's a real chance the Packers could win this. I see them as fairly even teams at this point, except for it's that the Packers have a massively dominant quarterback and hopefully an improved defense. And the Bears didn't get better at all that I can see. They traded Amos for HaHa Clinton Dix, which every Bears fan seems convinced is a win for the Bears. But it's basically it was a trade-off. They wanted to pay less money. They could not have afforded to keep Amos. Adrian Amos was going to be too much for what they could do. And instead, they let him go so they could get HaHa Clinton Dix. They didn't do it because HaHa was the better player. They did so because he's cheaper. And almost always, the NFL guys, they're not stupid. They're not idiots. This is available in the market to set the way it is because HaHa Clinton Dix on film is just not as good as Adrian Amos. And everybody sees it, which is why HaHa was still there after Amos was signed to be got cheaper. He's not the same player. He's not as physical. He seems to, after the first couple of years where he was great and he was a Pro Bowler, he seems to have become kind of allergic to the contact and not really interested in pushing forward to be more physical in the game, to take on blockers, to go up and make hits upfield. He seems to wait and try to just make a big splash play or not get hit. So, I mean, and that's his prerogative. He's an incredible guy, and I don't have anything bad to say about him as a person. I just think he seemed to have become much less physical over the years as it went on, and I think Washington saw that very much this year, which made it more of a national story because they weren't talking about it when he was with Green Bay. All they could talk about is he's a Pro Bowler. But once he went to Washington and he was in a completely different scenario, an entirely different fan base said, oh, hold on a second. You know, like they're throwing at this guy. So I think the Packers defense got better. The Bears defense got slightly worse to staying the same. Somewhere in there. They're not going to be bad. They're not going to fall apart over that. The rest of that team is solid. So having one guy like that, you know, changing that off is okay. They don't have the power rusher as much anymore. That offense is still going to be okay. They got a good offensive line. Trubisky is just he's a solid NFL quarterback. He belongs in the NFL, but he's not a world beater either. Whereas it's kind of the opposite on the Packers side. We have a world beater quarterback. And he makes a lot of people look better, and he covers up a lot of problems for your team. But the defense got a ton better this year. We forget that we ended the year with just about nobody still healthy on that defense. It made it look a lot worse than the way things actually were. We've replaced HaHa Clinton Dix with Adrian Amos. We've replaced anyone else back there in that safety spot, that rotating safety spots of the different, you know, Kentrell Bryce or whoever else we had back there throughout the year. You know, now we've got Darnell Savage back there. We've still got two young corners and Tremont Williams sitting there. Our linebackers are okay. Burks hopefully has a good step-up season this year and gets a little bit better, can play in there a little bit more on the field and get a little more time out there because I think he's athletic and it's interesting to see him. But the edge rush is going to be a lot better. And with good corners, it'll be incredible to see an actual edge rush because we had no pass rush last year other than Fackrell, who, of course, one of the sacks he recorded was one where actually nobody ever touched the quarterback. He just kind of fell over and blew the play dead. But still, Fackrell more as a third or fourth option. At this point, fourth, I would say. He's going to be behind Gary and both Smiths. It is a way better proposition for me. I think he's okay. He's an okay guy. You don't want him leading your team in sacks or in snaps even. So it'll be good to have that going. I think that this is going to be a Packers-Bears sort of division, but I don't think that there's any chance whatsoever Mitchell Trubisky will be an MVP or receive a single vote, to be entirely honest. I don't see it. I don't know where they're going through. This is the dead part of the year where people who don't talk baseball and don't talk basketball, and very few people talk hockey, you know, they're seeing basketball wind down. They're trying to find something else to talk about. The draft is over. We've been through this doldrums of OTAs where there's almost nothing going on because there's no pads. There's nothing really going on there. So now we're just making up stories. Guys on NFL Network saying they're going to be shocked if the Bears aren't in the Super Bowl. Bears haven't won a playoff game in several years. I'll be more surprised they make the Super Bowl than if they don't make the playoffs. And I'd be surprised if they don't make the playoffs, I guess. But I'd be more shocked if they made the Super Bowl than if they missed the playoffs. So that's what we've got for Packers here. And next little bit here, we got a little bit of Brewers news. It was an interesting week in terms of the Milwaukee Brewers this week. Of course, we ended last week with a little bit of hope. We were seeing, first off, I guess, the problem of Keston Hiura going back down and the massive panic that was causing people. But we were feeling very hopeful. We had Miami and Pittsburgh all at home. Six straight games there with Monday being a day off. And it started off with a massive thud. Everything that could go wrong basically went wrong for the Brewers. The Brewers ended up getting just six hits, committing two errors, giving up 19 hits of their own, and they had an 11-run fifth inning. Ended up losing 16-0. So Chase Anderson gets the loss. Chase Anderson made it four innings, four earned runs. So his ERA blooms up to a 3.93. Corbin Burns comes in, gives up an earned run as well. So he's up to a 9.79. He pitched two-thirds of an inning. Claudio came in, Barnes came in, Perez even got to come in there. He did the high kick, too. He did the, was it Willis? No, Willis or Dontrell Willis or whatever. The big high leg kick a couple times. And people say that, there were some people saying, well, they just don't even care at that point. They're just trying to play out the stretch. There's nobody in baseball who goes into an at-bat thinking they're going to do anything other than get a hit, okay? Because they get paid on their batting average. They don't waste an at-bat just because Hernan Perez is pitching. The problem with Hernan Perez is that they have no book on him. There's no scouting on him. And he's throwing a weird range of pitches. I mean, they're just basically throwing a pitch. But he throws somewhere in like 72 to like 86 or 88 sometimes. Not often, but sometimes he hauls back and throws it that way. And when you've been seeing, you know, 86 is a a changeup in 96 has been the fastball, and then suddenly you've got a guy throwing like this, it throws off your entire system. You're not used to the way the ball hangs. You're not used to the way it's moving or how it comes off the hand. It's not something they practice against. They don't practice hitting at that speed or that changeup of pitching speeds, you know, from 76 up to an 85. I mean, like, they're not used to that range of pitching. That doesn't mean you should pitch him again, because they will get a book on him then. And if they see it a couple times a year, they're definitely going to tee off on that pitching. But, I mean, that game was over anyhow. Hernan Perez comes in, gets one inning pitched, zero hits, zero runs, obviously, zero walks, zero strikeouts, just gets three outs. And that's kind of what he does. And don't think for a second, though, that they're not trying to tee off on Hernan Perez because they feel bad for the other team or that they're done. They didn't feel bad when they were up by 10. They didn't feel bad when they were up by 15. They kept swinging the bats. So, you know, just consider that. That's it. They did not pull off. That's a football thing. That's a basketball thing. You know, you rotate guys in. You do that sort of stuff just to make the game end and to keep your guys healthy. But in baseball, I mean, you get paid on your batting average. You don't waste an at bat because the game is over. You keep swinging. I mean, it's a different kind of game that way. And, you know, if you can have an 11-run inning, so can the other team. There's no time. There's just innings. So nobody does that. That being said, then they followed that stinker up with an 8-3 loss. Jimmy Nelson, in his comeback, did not do great in this one. I'm still excited to see him out there. I'm still very happy to see Jimmy Nelson out there. I don't think that we'll say it this way. It seemed like his pitch release was off. He at times would throw five or six straight balls. They would come in low or they'd come in offsides. He would outside, pardon me. And he just seemed off. His velocity was there. His break was there. I mean, the pitches were fine. They were just not located yet. He gave up a 4-run third inning, which was, I believe it was a walk, a hit, a walk, and then the home run was it Brian Anderson, oddly enough, got the grand slam there. And I say oddly enough because Brian Anderson also calls the game for the Brewers, but he wasn't that guy. He got a little bit of hitting here and there, a couple of plays. See, RBIs by Arcia, two RBIs by Grandal. So Arcia kept hitting well. Grandal has been great coming into these games. He's been playing very well, still hitting the ball very well. He went 2-for-4 in this game. He's batting .279 after that game. Shaw continues to struggle, but that was a rather low point for the Brewers, losing two in a row at home in games that you should have won. And it was right after the point in which they'd sent Hiura down. Now, first off, there's no chance in the world that you can blame Hiura for that. He's not going to get you 16 runs. He is not a 16-run difference in any game, nor is he going to help you in that 8-3. I mean, even if he gets you four runs, four RBI, which would be a very good day, you still lose that game, just closer. So he didn't cost them those games. Those games got away from them early and then just ballooned out. And there's just not much they could do with that, and it's not great to have seen. They did bounce back and avoid getting swept at home by the worst team in the National League. They got Peralta out there, and Peralta was throwing very good stuff early. He was keeping them off balance for quite a while. I believe he got into the sixth, and I'm going to double check that quick. He got through six innings, one earned run, which he gave up kind of late there in that sixth inning. But he got six innings, one earned run, only four hits. He did have nine strikeouts. So he had a very, very good game. When his stuff is hitting, and it looks really good when it's going well. It's the only times is when he loses it and they're finding him and he doesn't have it, then it goes south very quickly. But when he's got it and he's hitting his spots, it's going great. And he pitched great this game. He's 3-2 now. Jeffress came in, pitched an inning and two thirds. Hader took the four-out closeout there to get the save, his 14th of the year at the time. And, Brewers had a bunch of a very good hitting there. Braun got his 32nd RBI. Moustakas ended up getting two solo home runs in this game. And Yelich added another one as well. So I got a couple long balls and then six great innings from a starter. So only Jefferson Hader could go in the next couple innings. Only gave up five hits for the entire game. So that's what it looks like when things are going well. When things are clicking and that goes just exactly how he wanted it to. I think Peralta only ended up with 91 pitches on the game, too. So, I mean, he wasn't getting chased too badly. He was doing pretty well. So it's nice to see some of that. It would have been nice to see more play like that earlier from getting that from, you know, Jimmy Nelson or anyone else up there. Then they got to come in and they got to have some of their better pitchers, the top of their pitching roundup against the Pirates. And we were feeling a little worried coming into this after that last bit. But Woodruff comes in. Woodruff pitches another great game. Gets them another quality start. He goes six innings, gives up three earned runs. He's at 3.87 ERA. Claudio pitches one scoreless inning. And Burns comes in and gives him two innings with two hits. One earned run, but at that point it was 10-4. Well, it became 10-4 at that point. So the Brewers came in and really put up a good game, good offensive numbers in this one. Doubles by Grandal and Yelich and Arcia and Aguilar. Thames hit a home run, his eighth of the year, and then Braun added his 10th of the year. A lot of good hits. They had, 15 hits in this game to 7 for Pittsburgh. So Brewers looked a lot healthier in that. They started getting back to being themselves, I think, a little bit more here. They had both ends of the spectrum working in terms of this game. Woodruff giving them the big hit. He goes 8-1 now. And then Davies comes in to go 7-0 on the year as the Brewers then beat the Pirates Saturday 5-3. This is another one where it's nice having Davies on his game. He had a hiccup a couple weeks ago, but last week he got back into it. This week he got the win. He's 7-0, like I said. Five innings pitched, gave up three earned runs, didn't get the game here. So he got the win, though, and not the quality start, pardon me. He's still at a 2.41 ERA. Claudio comes in, Guerra comes in, Jeffers comes in. Hader gets his 15th save of the year. Claudio, Guerra, and Jeffers all get holds in this one. Claudio getting his 13th, and he has been great for this team. Not getting a lot of look. One thing is, during the game where Hernan Perez came in, he actually did the Claudio's got the little rock with his glove. He rocks his glove back and forth as he brings it to set. And Hernan Perez did a little ode to that when he was pitching. But it's good to see Claudio out there. He's been doing very well for this team. It definitely has been a good guy to bring in. He's been nice to have on this team, and it definitely helps change the look out of this game as it goes. Moustakas hit another home run in this game. And then Manny Pena got his second home run of the year in the eighth inning. So a lot of things going much better for the Brewers in those couple games. And then they complete the sweep on Sunday, another five-run game. They win this one 5-2. And Jeffers gets the win because it went kind of late. They were down 2-0 until the sixth. They were still tied 2-2 going in the bottom of the eighth. And then they got three runs in the eighth inning to take the 5-2 win. Yelich got a home run, and Moustakas got a home run. Now, that puts Yelich at 24 for the year, leading the National League at this point. And with the basically four home runs in about 4 days here, Moustakas is now up to 20 on the season. That ties him for third with Cody Bellinger. So Moustakas putting up great numbers, helping to carry this team as several people are still finding their swing. Like I said, still having problems getting Shaw going this year. He hasn't been out there a good number of times here. Perez playing again on Sunday. Having troubles just getting Shaw going. He's back from injury again. So, I mean, it might take a little bit here too. I guess I don't think he's done. You know, Shaw has the ability to go out there and start putting things up. He's batting right now actually 170. And that's actually, sadly, a slight uptick from where he'd been earlier in the year. Now, he's been great for two straight years. Now, that's the thing where, you know, like Aguilar is a very different story. Aguilar came up last year, kind of came out of nowhere, had great power, great accuracy. He put the ball, scattered it around the field, made a lot of different plays, and that changed the way that the team kind of ran and the concept of how you attack the order. But he did it for 1 year. Then they get a little bit of look at you, and they start getting a book on you. and they get an off season to prepare for you. That's different. Shaw's been doing it for a couple years. He's been great for the last 2 years for the Brewers. This is the fluke. This is the fluke this year because he's already shown you that he's got a sustained success at the point in which they got a book on him and that they ran that book on him. He's still hitting. So when you see this, you know that this part's the fluke and he's going to get it back. When he does, it's going to be very good because, this Brewers team, you've been playing with Shaw hurt or not playing well. Braun is doing okay. He's a 10 home run guy and batting okay. And with all of that, with all these things going on, with having Burns drop out of your starting lineup and having to kind of reinvent himself as he goes a little bit, Jimmy Nelson having been hurt and just now coming back, the Brewers are still tied with the Cubs atop the National League Central. They're essentially one win up and one loss up with the Cubs, but that means their overall win percentage is two thousandths of a percent worse. It's 578 to 576. But so they're 38 and 28, 10 games over 500. Third best record right now in the National League behind the Dodgers and the Cubs, but essentially tied with the Cubs at this point on a four-game win streak. Now, the next part is going to be the hard part. They're going to have the Astros for two games in Houston, and that's, they get a day off, thankfully, before they go into that, and they get a day off after that. And then they get to go out and play San Francisco and San Diego on a little road trip before they come back and get to play four against Cincinnati. Again, June is the month that they got to make hay. And if you told me at the beginning here of this week that they were going to go, two and one against Miami and then 2-1 against Pittsburgh, I would have said, I was hoping for sweeps of both, but, that's fine. They win both series, that's good. But, we still, in effect, had the same sort of thing. We had four wins, two losses. But the difference is that with this, we had two losses and a series loss against Miami and then had to pull out the sweep to get a four-game-in-a-row win streak going here as we head into Houston. That changes the way you look at this series. Getting a series loss at home against Miami is a failure. It's a failure on this team, and they needed to get something different. And that's going to hurt them down the line. Those were wins you can't just give up. You lost to a team you should have beaten, and you should have swept both these teams. And they ended up losing a series to Miami. That being said, the panic needs to calm down just a little bit. We need to pull back a little bit. It's 162 games, and we're in first place. So there's things going well. Jimmy Nelson's going to get better and better as he goes. It's nice to have him back. It's going to be good to give Chacin some time to rest, get him healthy, get him back up to the major leagues, and have him pitching again. We'd love to have him back and ready. Shaw is going to get better. I can't promise you Aguilar is. They need to figure out something with first base. Whether it's, Shaw gets healthy, starts playing better, and then you can move Moustakas to first, because that would be a great way to get that going, and then bring Hura up to second. That works if Shaw's hitting. If he's not, then we need to find something to do at first base that's going to get some runs on the board and get that going. That being said, there's plenty of things to be hopeful for with this team and plenty of things going well. Now, the biggest thing is that they find ways to win. That they find ways to get things done. The bullpen's getting a little healthier. They're not having to chew up so many innings, and that's going to help out this team a lot more down the stretch. If they can keep getting these quality starts out of guys like Woodruff and Davies, and if they can get just one or two out of Nelson as we get a little healthier here, and if we can bring Chacin back up, and we can start getting some of these things, then we're going to be a little healthier as we go down the stretch, and that's what they need to be focusing on is just trying to keep doing those little things they're doing and find those ways to win games. So that's kind of where they are. It's still good to see the Brewers at the top. That's the real sports that we have in Wisconsin right now because we're not busy watching basketball, and the NHL still won't give us a team. So focusing on the Brewers, and it's still good to be able to see them and to listen to them on the radio. And I was out traveling a bit this weekend, so it was nice to be able to hear you call on the game as I was traveling out to the Twin Cities and back for my daughter's lacrosse tournaments. That's really all I have here. And again, being the sports abyss that we're in, we're going to be just kind of pulling the tail and the last call into a single thing here. So we'll finish everything off here with the last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
With the fact that we're not rooting for an NBA team right now, I guess there's not a lot to say about what's going on in the finals. Other than to say that some of the Raptors fan base is getting super annoying, I guess. Today, we're getting a lot of reports here now. I'm not watching a minute of it because I don't want to watch this. It's not great to watch. The Warriors are a great team to watch in general because they really pass the ball well. They're a lot of fun to watch because it looks like real basketball. They set up plays. They set up a lot of passing. And they get things done. The Raptors have been playing a lot better in terms of that. They were finding ways to get scoring from somebody other than Kawhi, but it is mostly just Kawhi taking over games, and he's an incredible talent, and that's good for them and good for him. One of the things I will say though is, well, they're apparently cheering for KD getting hurt. Now that's one of the least Canadian things I've ever seen and heard, but cheering for a person getting hurt is ridiculous. They don't do that in hockey, for crying out loud. Now, one of the craziest things I've heard this week is the idea of people on ESPN constantly saying things like, hey, if the Raptors win this, is that a bigger deal than if the Toronto Maple Leafs won a Stanley Cup? And the answer is, of course, no, no, and no. There's not a chance it matches the Stanley Cup in Canada, where they invented hockey. But there's been a lot of people who definitely get on and say, because they're American basketball fans, I definitely think that's true. I definitely think that there's a chance that this changes sports in Canada. You know what? If the Blue Jays winning a World Series didn't change sports in Canada, getting the Raptors to win one isn't going to do anything for sports in Canada. They're going to watch hockey. You know how I know? Is because you go watch the Olympics. The Canadian baseball team, or no, I guess that's not in the Olympics, but the World Classic, Canada's not following the World Classic of baseball. They don't follow it like they do Olympic hockey. You know what? You can look out there and you can see that when they're putting out a team on the ice, that is the collection of the greatest athletes in Canada, because the best athlete in every school goes and plays hockey in Canada. The best athlete in your town, he's a hockey player in Canada, or she's a hockey player in Canada. Those people are what's going on there. That's why when we say, if soccer were bigger in the U.S., people like LeBron James play soccer. It isn't to say that if LeBron James started playing soccer tomorrow, he'd be a world-class one. But if soccer were important enough, he'd have been playing all along. And he'd have been way better. If America were sending our best athletes to the World Cup instead of the kids that wanted to play soccer, we'd be way better in the world. It's just, it's the fourth or fifth most important sport in our country. But that being said, basketball's not going to pass hockey in Canada. And you can try to work that all you want. It's just not going to happen. Canada is a hockey. You'd be lucky if it outpaced curling if they were all on. If Olympic curling were on, too, and the Maple Leafs were in the Stanley Cup right now, and the Raptors were playing, if those three things happened at once, the Raptors would be playing in front of an empty arena. I mean, and it's just crazy that, and it's always an American basketball fan that they ask on radio if that's what's going to happen, and it's, of course, ridiculous to believe that. That being said, one of the other things that's going on interesting right now is the College World Series for baseball. The Softball World Series ended last week, I believe. The baseball one is fun and it's interesting and it's always really cool to see, and I've heard it's one of the coolest events in all of sports, but I don't experience it in any way because Wisconsin doesn't have a baseball team. We are the only Big Ten school without a baseball team. Jim Widener and Aaron and I had a little bit on this on Twitter this last week talking about it. It really is time for UW to figure out a way to get all the scholarships worked out to make sure that there's an actual baseball team. And there's a club baseball team, and they're a pretty good club baseball team, and I follow them on Twitter. I don't have their address in front of me, but I do follow them, and they're an interesting team, and they do generally pretty well. But Wisconsin needs a D1 baseball program. We've had some very good baseball programs here. The UW-Stevens Point Pointers have won several national championships. UW-Oshkosh Titans have won several national championships. This is a very good baseball state. And it's just time that we had that, and I don't know what we need to do, what kind of petition or pressure we need to put on the university to make that happen, but need to have a D1 baseball program again. One of the other little things I'd like to point out here, too, is in terms of a good thing, DeSean Jackson went back into Philadelphia and brought food to the homeless this week, finding individuals who were hungry, people in underpasses, people just out in the streets, and he brought them food. And, to the people who try to say, well, he shouldn't have been recording it, that's all well and good. He did good. If he needs to be recorded doing it, that's fine. I don't care. He did a good thing for people. And maybe it was just one day. Maybe it was just one day, but that day mattered. It mattered a lot to those people. So good on you, DeSean Jackson. A wonderful thing to do to at least go out and do something good in the world to just make somebody else's day better for that day. The other thing, too, as we wrap up this show, is just good luck to David Ortiz. If you haven't heard, I don't know where you've been. He was shot in the back and very badly hurt, but it looks like he's going to make it. What a terrible thing for just for anybody. And the fact that he's just such a good philanthropist, somebody who does so much good in both Boston, Boston area, and in the Dominican Republic where he is from. It's especially sad to just see that it was initially reported as an attempted robbery. It's very clearly not a robbery. A guy just walks up on him and shoots him in the back while he's sitting down. It's a pretty terrible thing to see. Don't watch it. But we hope he has a speedy recovery. It sounds like the Boston Red Sox sent down their plane to make sure they could get him back to Boston to get him further treatment and recovery so he can make a full recovery and continue, you know, working at MLB Network and ESPN or wherever else he's working. But, you know, we're all praying for you, David Ortiz. So many wonderful things you've done over the years, and I'd hate to see this this sort of action against you or against anybody. So, best of luck to you, and we are also pulling for you. That will be it for us this week. We'll see if Aaron will be back. He's obviously still doing 2 weeks. If not, I'm going to try to keep pushing to have somebody else come up here. As much fun as it is to just talk at you for 40 minutes, 45 minutes, whatever it comes out to, I like having somebody else to bounce things off of and somebody to disagree with me. And it makes the show better because I need to be disagreed with sometimes. That being said, though, thank you again for joining us for another week, whether you follow us on Apple Podcasts, whether you follow us on Stitcher or Spotify or whatever else, whatever little program you use to go get your podcast. Thank you for doing so. Please remember to rate us. Give us that review to help everybody else find us. Make sure to share our podcast. You can check us out again on our website, which is ScottyJohnny.com. All of the Twitter stuff, again, you can follow me at JBarn54. You can follow Aaron at Cheddar Talk. You can also follow the show at ScottyJohnny1. ScottyJohnny and the number 1. If you have anything you want to send us, any thoughts, ideas, or suggestions, you can, of course, send that to podcast@ScottyJohnny.com. And remember, whether you are on the town or on the go, it is always on Wisconsin.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening.